Les colloques du Collège de France.
Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs. Merci beaucoup à monsieur le professeur Desroches de m'avoir invité à ce colloque pour vous présenter mon travail. Je suis honoré d'être ici avec vous et j'ai hâte de discuter de mes idées avec vous en anglais, s'il vous plaît. So, my topic today is the verb arsal in the Quran, and I've added a subtitle to explain what I will actually do, which is to look at this verb and its collocates through the lens of corpus linguistics and the variant readings of the Quran. I would just like to begin with very preliminary things. For example, the manuscript tradition of the Quran. I think most of us know that in old manuscripts, the dotting, in Arabic, we distinguish consonants with dots. You can have one, two, or three dots to disambiguate consonants. For example, up to like six or seven consonants with one letter shape. And in early manuscripts, we don't have those consistently. So you might think or be led to think that there might be some variance in the readings of the Quran pertaining to the early codification. What we should keep in mind is that the textual transmission and the oral transmission were kind of parallel, hand in hand. I will give a very, I hope, illuminating examples in 1 minute. But just on the question of the missing disambiguation of letters and obviously also the missing vocalization, I'm sorry I should have picked examples in French, but I hope these will be enough to illuminate that we can read the first text on the top left without any voweling. Today I had a rotten day. As I was coming in from play, I accidentally stubbed my toes and tripped and fell and whacked my nose, etc. I think it's quite relatable. And the one bottom right, I can read it, can you? It's obviously taken from the internet, right? If you can read this, you have a strange mind too. Can you read this? Only 55 people out of 100 can. I couldn't believe that I could actually understand what I was reading. The phenomenal power of the human mind, etc. It works as well. I'm not saying that the Quran was written like this. I'm saying that given the parallel oral transmission and the lack of disambiguation of consonants or diacritics does not really surprise me. In any case, the disambiguation and the voweling came along over time, and if you look at this manuscript on the right side, you can see a very pretty, nicely decorated, illuminated manuscript of the Quran, which has all these diacritics in it. And if you look on the left side, you see that that edition of the Quran even includes annotation on how to pronounce and recite the text appropriately, which letters are to be assimilated in recitation, which letters are to be accentuated. And I couldn't help but think of this. So we all know the cello suite of Johann Sebastian Bach. We know that there is no autograph of it. We know that in the extant manuscripts of it, there is no indication of, since it's a cello piece, do you start on an up bow or a down bow? Do you slur the first four notes, the first three notes, the third and the fourth note? There is no indication of all of this. But if you speak to classical musicians, you will know that they're all very eager to reproduce the Baroque sound of this piece to the best of their abilities. While we all know, you just need to go to the Louvre or the Musée d'Orsay to see that the Baroque cello look different than the ones we have today, right? So it's difficult to copy the sound. But still, here on this slide, you see four different manuscripts of the beginning of the prelude to Bach's cello suite number one. And you can see that there's differences in the slurring. So which notes are played together in one bow? Let's say it's a down bow. In the first manuscript, which is by one of his wives, Anna Magdalena, you see that the third and fourth note are slurred. So you start, right? It's a different rhythm, like you go bam, 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 rather than in the second one you do ba-ra-ram, pa-pa-pa-pam, which is closer to what we are used to hear. different cellists play this differently, and you might wonder how this relates to variant readings of the Quran. Well, to me, most of the variant readings are relating to the voweling, the vocal length. So is it like an A, is it an A, is it an A, right? To me, that sounds like it. Well, and I play the cello. And the other thing is, you might wonder, are there any differences in the notes, the way we have like different consonants in the Quran at times? Well, yes, there is actually a difference. And if you look at measure 27, that would be the last two sets of notes, you can see that we start on an, A-C-E-G, right? And in the third and fourth manuscript, you have A-C-E-F sharp. So whether you have an F sharp or a G, it sounds quite different, but that's not the only difference. If you look at the last four notes, you see that in the first two manuscripts, you go up. So you go A-C sharp, D down to the C sharp, while in the third and fourth manuscript, you see that you're actually playing up the scale to the C sharp to then go on to the D and descend in a D scale. Right, so they're quite different. The feeling is different, the sound is different. Now, what do we do with this? How can we relate this to different readings of the Quran? First of all, I would like to remind all of us that people that were engaged in Quranic studies and the readings, they were actually experts in their field. They were just as dedicated students and scholars in their field as somebody who wants a small child that wants to become a professional cellist and goes like from master to master to master to learn how to perform professionally. So we should not assume that these people had loss of memory or were not adequate. No, they were actually the masters of the field. And many people knew the Quran by heart. I think all of them basically knew the Quran by heart. There were no concordances, there were no computers, there was nothing. So, and I will pick up on one specific cue from an old book, and I will follow this through in today's lecture. It took until 1945 to have a printed concordance of the Quran that made it possible for people like me to engage in Quranic studies, to actually find parallels, to find all the occurrences of a specific root, of a specific word. And I was born in 1985, and this is how I learned to do Quranic studies. There was nothing else when I was studying, right? It took until 2007 to have the first online Unicode encoded text of the Quran that was verified, and that actually allows you to perform a root search online, which was, I don't want to say revelation, but I'm tempted because it says Tanzil, which was a sensation for the day. And up to 2017, Qais Dukes worked on his webpage, on his website, or it's a platform actually, that helps you to do research. It's called corpus.quran.com. And it also features an online concordance of verbs in the Quran. And obviously, as we have heard from Dear Katvik, one of our speakers today, the Corpus Quranicum, which comes to an end this year, it's a digital platform of research resources, including manuscripts, variant readings, texts from the world around the Quran, printed editions, and the concordance as well. And when we deal with variation, especially linguistic variation that we come across in variant readings of the Quran, we have to consider the geographical area, the expanse of the Umayyad Empire back in the day. And it is often through these linguistic differences that people have engaged with the variant readings of the Quran, like the pronunciation of specific words like bait, for example, house in Arabic, the AY, the diphthong, gets monophthongized in colloquials. We have bait turning into bit in the Eastern Hemisphere and beat in the Western Hemisphere. And we do have some Quranic readings where the plural of houses, houses is not buyut but biyut, right? So that is one of those regional varieties. Now, what is my idea after all this? My idea was, I published a paper in 2016 about Arim. In the Quran, we have this passage where people in Southern Arabia, in Sabah especially, are meant to have been punished by a flood, which is called the Sayl al-Arim. And the phrasing goes, وَارْسَلَ عَلَيْهِمْ سَيْلَ الْعَرِيمِ. So he sent against them the flood of Arim. Whatever Arim means, I've written a paper about it. Many people have. I just added one. And what I noticed is that there is this phrase which is made up of the causative form of the verb to send. So he sent with the preposition ala, against. What follows what is punishment, except for in a few cases where I think there is an inversion for syntactic prominence, right? Like an inversion for rhetorical measure. I will go through all of these examples in a bit. Though I found one master's thesis from Algeria in 2016, دراسة تحليلية well, الفعل أرسل في القرآن الكريم, where the person has done like a semantic analysis of the verb أرسل in the Quran. Well, I thought back in 2016 I'd found something, but obviously something about someone about 1,000 years earlier than me had mentioned this in their exegesis, saying that if you look at the occurrences of arsala with ala in the Quran, you might find a specific pattern. Well, right he was, because there is a pattern. And the person, Ibn Atiyya, didn't stop there. In his exegesis on Surah 17, verses 68 and 69, he actually points out that this passage, yursil alaykum hasiban and fa yursil alaykum qasifan, has been read with a noon instead of a ya. So, nursil alaykum hasiban and fa nursil alaykum qasifan. Now, you might think that, well, what's the problem? In both cases, the subject is obviously the divine subject. So, it's he or we using the majestic plural. But is that all? Is that all it is? Or is there more to this? How can we know? First of all, I looked at all the occurrences where a ya in the prominent Hafs reading of the Quran is turned into a noon in various qira'at. Thankfully, I could rely on a database provided by the Corpus Quranicum, which is based on Adanis Kitab al-Taysir fil Qira'at al-Sab'a, which we've heard already about today. And believe it or not, there's 9,338 entries for variants regarding 2,036 verses of the Quran. That is about a third of the book. And if we look at all these examples where a ya for he changes into a noon for we, as like the royal plural, we see that there is 31 verses. And if we look at the different readers of the Quran, we see there is like clusters of similar changes. And regarding the two verses that I want to talk about, 1768 and 1769, you see that the two readers are actually isolated. No other readers read it that way. And they didn't only change the yursil into nursil, but they actually changed also the yakhsifa into nakhsifa, yursila into nursila, yu'idakum ila nu'idakum, yughriqakum ila to nughriqakum. So there is a whole bunch of changes done in order to create this reading. And if we look into this closer, we see that Abu Amr and Ibn Kathir, the two readers in question, they agree overall in about half the variance of ya to noon changes regarding 13 verses, which is, I mean, a very little amount. But I'm trying to play up the significance of this so that in the end we can all have a big Heureka moment. And Abu Amr and Ibn Kathir, as we said, are isolated in the reading of the two verses. What do we do? We will analyze all occurrences of the verb arsala and its subject, tense and mood, voice, polarity, transitivity, and its object and adverbs. So we get to have a huge table of all the occurrences, which are 130. Interestingly enough, almost all occurrences, 90% of the occurrences are in Meccan surahs. So we could almost say that arsala marks Meccan content, which is obviously to send a messenger or punishment, as we will see shortly. We can see that arsala works transitively with an object in about half the occurrences, and then with prepositions ala, ila, fi, and ma'a. We will concentrate on ala and ila here because we can oppose them nicely. As to the subject of arsala, oh my gosh, I'm sorry about this. Your computer does not speak Arabic. للأسف. بس بدنا نعلمه. We see that the subject is mostly divine in about 118 of the 130 cases, which works well for us, so we can actually contrast Arsala Ala and Arsala Ila. We see that in the case of Arsala Ala, we have two clusters. We have 17 occurrences in the past tense and 9 in the present, while for Arsala Ila, it's quite clear. In 26 of the 28 cases, the verb is used in the past tense, and in only 2 cases in presentive case. Regarding the voice, we see that in the majority of cases, the voice is active, so the divine subject is acting, right? And with regard to polarity, it's mostly, like in the overwhelming majority of the cases, positive. Even when we have many negations, as like in the case of Arsala, all the cases of negation are followed by illa, creating an exceptional note, so which is again kind of a form of affirming the statement. Let's start with the easier one, Arsala Ala. We see that mostly, or in all cases, the object is a messenger. So God sends a messenger, and almost in all cases, we have the past tense used. So God makes a statement about messengers that he has used, except for in one case where the verb is used in the present tense. وَيُرْسِلُ الْأُخْرَى إِلَىٰ أَجْلٍ مُسَمَّى. So the أُخْرَى are all of us today, this morning, because we went to bed last night, we slept, and God sent our souls back this morning to wake up. That is the context of that verse. All the other cases are about sending a messenger. Quite clear. Well, and the one case where the Holy Spirit was sent to Maryam, or to Mary, okay? But yes. Then we said there are some cases where we have syntactic inversion for rhetorical effect, and these are the 6 cases where I think, for example, in the first case, وَمَا أُرْسِلُ عَلَيْهِمْ حَافِظِينَ. حَافِظِينَ is obviously not a punishment, and this is not kind of a joke or sarcasm or irony in the Quran. I think this is just like an inversion. So instead of saying وَمَا أُرْسِلُ حافظين as an adverbial accusative, عليهم, it is وما أرسل عليهم حافظين, because it probably flows better, right? So these 6 cases, we put them aside, and then we get to أرسل على. Finally, we see that there is a correlation between subject, tense, and object in the second and third bullet points. We see that the subject, he, goes with the present tense, and the set doing something against you, while when the subject is we, it correlates with the past tense and them. So whenever there is a punishment story from the past cited, then it is always the royal plural against them. We have nothing to do with them. We were not there. We didn't see anything. So it's a we against them. And when punishment or threat is imminent now, then it's always him against you, right? When we follow this through, it becomes very clear. For Arsala Ala, we have these 2 cases of present tense and past tense. It's a different context, different subject, different object, different protagonists. And Arsala Ila is very clear. It's almost always in the past, and it's always about sending a messenger, while Arsala Ala is about punishment mostly. Now, when we look at this again, what Ibn Atiyya said 1,000 years ago, it looks like the man knew something, obviously. As we said, these people knew things, but they couldn't maybe count things the way we can today. And if we look at this reading that he mentioned, where Ibn Kathir and Abu Amr read this passage differently, we see that the 2 cases where yursil occurs here and here have been changed to nursil. Check this out. It doesn't go any bigger. But you can see that there is 1 dot here and there is 2 dots here under. There is 1 dot above, and you see the dot above here, 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 and here. They've changed the whole, every verb in these two verses in order to change the subject from he to we. But we said he works with the present tense. Here now we have we with the present tense verb. And this is the only context where that has happened among 31 verses across the whole Quran, and two of them are here. How does this change the narrative then? Well, I think it changes it quite a bit, because when we want to test things, we need to set a context and then we check what happens to it. So if we consider the parameters subject and verb and tense, and we only change the object, we actually have two cases in the Quran where that is the case. So when we send hasib on the left side, and when we send midrar on the right side, we see that both of them are used in presentive and past context. And the present tense we have on the left side, أَوْ يُرْسِلْ عَلَيْكُمْ حَاصِبًا and أَنْ يُرْسِلْ عَلَيْكُمْ حَاصِبًا, and in the past tense, أَرْسَلْنَا عَلَيْهِ حَاصِبًا, when عَلَيْهِ is plural because it goes on from فَمِنْهُمْ, and here we have إِنَّا أَرْسَلْنَا عَلَيْهِمْ حَاصِبًا. So we've got the same object, but when the narrative is in the past, the subject is نَحْنُ and the object is هُمْ, and in the present tense, the subject is هُوَ and the object is عَلَيْكُمْ. And the same is true for midrar when it occurs. So we have here a case of iltifat in action, where the subject, tense, and addressee change together according to the narrative. And these guys have changed that for whatever reason. And you might think of different reasons for it, but maybe they just change the narrative to augmentate it. And I think they might have gone, like in manuscript 3 and 4 of the Bach Prelude, they might have gone up the scale to make the whole thing bigger, to bring in nahnu instead of huwa. But you have to change all four instances of the verbs in order to get there. What would I like to do with this in mind? Well, I would like to give a small plaidoyer on when we deal with Quranic research to not disregard any hints in old books because they were old, but actually those people knew their field very well. They just didn't have the same means as we have today. So we should by all means critically engage with the scholarship around the Quran in past and present, be it Eastern or Western or anything in between. We should also use the digital tools. I showed some of them here. And we should also resort to using or start using digital methodologies that can be to use digital archives, digital databases. We should apply text mining, digital text analysis. We should perform spatiotemporal analysis of variation, which could come very handy with the Qira'at, for example, the variant readings of the Quran. And we should by all means present and visualize the variation. And maybe we can even not visualize, but oralize, audiate, sonify some sort of variation to actually relate to it. And we should, by all means, analyze the variation systematically and linguistically. We should evaluate how this variation works in the context of the Quranic discourse. We can't say that these people read the Quran wrongly. I mean, they knew what they were reading, I think. They might have just like reshaped the narrative. Unless it was really due to memory loss, and then you have to change all the verbs in that passage. And most of all, what can this variation that is well codified in compendia of variant readings of the Quran, some of which are 10 volumes this size, all this is known since age-old times, what can it tell us about language and sound change in Arabic? We don't have any recordings, but we have everything written down. Merci pour votre écoute.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.